Welcome to this latest edition of the Real Deal Podcast. I'm your host, the Real Gerald Quinn. As we record this on a Wednesday, a day later than normal. Certainly apologies for that, but you know, schedule goes the way it goes sometimes. 8 days before Thanksgiving. We are coming close to the home stretch of the NFL season. A big weekend of NFL games. You saw this past week, Showdown Sunday, and we begin with the game of the week. Buffalo finally ending the 15-game winning streak of the Kansas City Chiefs, 30-21. Buffalo offensively really, you know, controlled this game for the most part. I know they were only up 16-14 at the half. But they seemingly to me were in control of this game, basically from the start. Buffalo, right now, and again, this hasn't been anything new with these two particular teams. Buffalo has beaten Kansas City four straight times in the regular season. That, of course, has not translated to the postseason, and you know, with this win, Buffalo, right, it puts themselves right in the thick of the home of the home race for home field advantage at 9-2. They're playing outside Detroit. You can make a case that Buffalo's playing as well as any team in the league right now. Again, over the course of this season, I think this has been one of the best stories of the NFL season. No one expected Buffalo to be this good. They, over the past couple of years, and in particular this past offseason, lost a ton of talent. And they came to this season with few feeling like they were not could struggle to even make the playoffs. You know, a lot of people were talking about the Jets, you know, Miami and what have you, and Buffalo, since being embarrassed by the Baltimore Ravens, I think the last loss was to the Houston Texans, has again been playing as well as any team in the NFL. Josh Allen right now, and again, this could change in the next couple of weeks. You still have a ton of football to be played. I had to put Josh Allen at, up top the NFL the MVP rankings right now. He breaks. So, you know, in this game, he was not spectacular in this game, but when plays had to be made, he made them, including a play that if Buffalo is to go on and do anything in the playoffs, get to a Super Bowl, win a Super Bowl, we will remember this run that he had to end Kansas City's bid at an undefeated season. This 30-yard touchdown run. Spectacular touchdown run. He finished on the day 12 carries for 55 yards, and outplayed Patrick Mahomes. Mahomes was not good in this game for the most part. 26 yards. Let me get that corrected. 26 yard touchdown for Allen. But Allen, Patrick Mahomes was not good in this game, threw for under 200 yards, had a couple of interceptions. Buffalo and as a team, you know, Kansas City only had 259 yards of total offense. They really kept Kansas City in check, even on the ground. Controlled this game for the most part, even though it was nip tuck for the up until the fourth quarter. I thought Buffalo was the better team on this particular night, particular evening. Now, listen, I'm not going to sit up here and push a panic button on a team that had won 15 straight games, a team that is now 9-1, and a team that frankly still controls its own destiny. So I think Kansas City is who they are. To me, still the team to beat until somebody beats them. Not going to make the mistake of overreacting to a loss in Buffalo against the hottest team in the conference. and again, maybe the highest team outside Detroit in the entire league. This game was less about Kansas City and more about Buffalo. Buffalo now has to be considered a team that could possibly go to and win the Super Bowl. Again, this is a team that's played in a ton of big games over the course of the last 4 to 5 seasons. They've had their heart broken by Kansas City a lot. They had the bad loss a couple of years ago against Cincinnati at home. And, you know, sometimes it's interesting that sometimes teams that have been knocking at the door, sometimes they win a championship when you least expect it. I remember the 2018 Washington Capitals winning the Stanley Cup, or the Washington Nationals in 2019 winning the World Series. Those are back-to-back years in which those teams were not expected to win championships. Those are teams in the DMV that had been, again, knocking on the door in the playoffs every year, consistently winning a ton of regular season games, getting to the postseason and struggling and coming up short. And in those particular seasons, you know, things clicked in the postseason. They got hot towards the end of the regular season, and it carried over into the postseason. They made a run, and they ran that all the way to a championship. So sometimes it's a year where you don't expect the team to win a championship. I mean, I remember Indianapolis Colts in 2006. 2005 was the year where they started out, like, I believe, 13-0. That was the year where everybody thought they're a lock to win it, where they went out and lost their first playoff game to Pittsburgh, came back in 06 and finally got that elusive first Super Bowl for Peyton Manning. So sometimes that's how sometimes it goes in the NFL. Again, Buffalo in the league right now has the second best point differential. Their defense is playing well. They're extremely well coached. They have an excellent kicker. And again, this is a team that has won a number of regular season games. They have been a very consistent franchise over the past 4 to 5 years. And this is a team that has no fear of Kansas City. Again, in the playoffs, you would trust Kansas City. Kansas City has had their number in the postseason, so we can't forget about that. But, you know, Buffalo is right there. I think, and I'll give you the teams later on in the podcast, but I think right now, as it stands, there are 3 teams that can win the Super Bowl as we stand here on a November 20th. And Buffalo, to me, is one of those teams. 24th, Baltimore and Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh, again, continues to own Baltimore. 18-16, this was a classic rock fight type game between these two franchises. One of the better, one of the better rivalries, of course, in football. Pittsburgh, again, not only owns Baltimore, they own Lamar Jackson. Lamar Jackson just has not been able to do anything against Pittsburgh over the course of his career. He is now 1-4 against Pittsburgh, 5 touchdowns, 11 turnovers. The biggest story about, to me, Pittsburgh controlled this game at the line of scrimmage as far as their defensive line just destroyed Baltimore's offensive line. And Pittsburgh was able to control the clock, held the ball for 36 minutes. It's not like Russell Wilson went out there and set the world on fire. Matter of fact, he had a bad interception, a horrible interception that you just can't throw late in the game. Like, you just can't make that giveaway. That gave away some points that could have actually cost Pittsburgh the game. So Pittsburgh didn't play well offensively, but the story was their defense. The thing that I will take from this game, a couple of things I take from this game. The first thing is Justin Tucker. Justin Tucker misses 2 field goals. This is a guy who there was a stretch in his career where he was by far the best kicker in football. And at one point in his career, and it still may be now, the most accurate kicker in all football, and was money. Absolutely money. he has had a bad year this year, and he misses two field goals. He is no longer automatic. He's no longer the best kicker in football. Matter of fact, like, there are a couple guys right now that I would take over Justin Tucker in 2024. You know, Harrison Buckner and the Dallas kicker being two of them. Matter of fact, Boswell, who probably has been the most underrated kicker maybe in recent memory. I'm not going to say NFL history, maybe in NFL history, but Chris Boswell just stays consistent. That's a tough state. He makes, you know, he made his field goals. Tucker missed it. I could make a case that that was the difference in the game. And that's a hard stadium to kick in Pittsburgh. As not a, he is one of the toughest stadiums to kick, make field goals in. And this guy is as steady as they come. As you know, Pittsburgh kicks six field goals. I think that I don't like Baltimore right now. Again, defensively, Baltimore was good enough in this game. You know, you hold a team to six field goals. Russell Wilson was okay. Now they couldn't get off the field, so that was problematic. But this wasn't about their defense, and we remember Baltimore came to this game playing horrible pass defense. Baltimore right now, they're upside. I don't trust Baltimore. To me, the variance of their A game versus their versus when they play poor is too wide. Like, Baltimore on certain Sundays can look like the best team in football. They can be overpowering with physicality. They can, you know, Lamar Jackson can be what he is. Derrick Henry could be what he is, but they're very sloppy. They're very mistake prone. Lead the league in penalties. Tucker hasn't been good this year. I just don't like the feel of that team right now. As we head towards Thanksgiving and into December, could they turn around and still win the division? Yes, but they make a lot of mistakes. They make a ton of mistakes. I didn't like the play call going for when they could have tied the game going for two. I would have gave the ball to Derrick Henry. I'm sorry. I would have gave the ball to Derrick Henry. Pittsburgh clearly has a beat on scrambling quarterbacks. This is back-to-back games where they basically have handled two of the best running quarterbacks in the league in Jaden Daniels and Lamar Jackson in back-to-back weeks. So to me, on that play, I would have gave the ball to Lamar. Derrick Henry. So Pittsburgh is right in the thick. Right now, Pittsburgh is absolutely in control of that division, and they, similar to Buffalo, also are in the thick of a home field advantage. I think Pittsburgh is very good. I don't think Wilson is good enough for them to make the Super Bowl. Like, I think Wilson is serviceable. At this point, I don't think you're not going to Super Bowl without having your quarterback win you a game or two in the playoffs. It's just not going to happen. You're not like, and I don't think Wilson's at the level to where he can win them a game. Where he can win them multiple games. And you have to have a quarterback in the playoffs that can win you at least one game, if not multiple games. Like Patrick Mahomes, Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson, those guys can go out there and win multiple games. Jared Goff doesn't have to, because that's how balanced Detroit is. He can win one game, though. He can get you one game. But he doesn't have to carry a team, because Detroit is that balanced and playing that dominantly, that dominant right now. But for the most part, you have to have a quarterback that can go out there and get you one to two games, even in the playoffs. I don't see Russell Wilson as that. This Pittsburgh team, that you just have a situation where Pittsburgh is extremely, obviously, well coached, and obviously one of the more physical, if not the most physical team in all of football. Philadelphia in a divisional battle, Philadelphia was able to take charge and take control of the division, taking out the Commanders 26-18. This game was, you know, a very, This game was a rock fight for the first three quarters, with a damn broke in the fourth quarter, where Philadelphia scores 20 points. They Philadelphia controlled this game. They clearly were the better team. They outgained Washington by well over 200 yards. I mean, you know, they outgained Washington 434, close to 200 yards, 434 to 264. Probably Jaden Daniels' worst performance of the season for him. And despite that, Washington loses a one-score game. Here's the thing. First of all, this was a game that, again, Washington is improved, but it's just not quite there yet. There's still a couple players away on defense. And, you know, I had no problem with the defense. The problem with Washington right now, we obviously know Jaden Daniels is not healthy. It's not an excuse. It's just a fact. So if he can't run, you know, if he can't get you, you know, 7 to 10 carries for like 40 to 70 yards, that completely really makes their offense limited. You've seen Philadelphia and Pittsburgh back-to-back weeks have a beat on Washington's, really stopped Washington from running the football. Washington's defense held up as much as it could against Philadelphia. Philadelphia's defense has played great this year for the most part. They have a legit top five defense. Can Philadelphia, Detroit is in a class by itself right now as far as the NFC goes. I still think Green Bay's upside is higher than Philadelphia's, to be honest with you, But Philadelphia, you know, if you want to say Philadelphia is the second best team in the conference, they probably are. Like, I would not dispute that. I don't completely trust Philadelphia. I don't think Hurts was great this game. And to me, if you neutralize Saquon Barkley and put the onus on Hurts, that offense can look spotty, to say the least. So I think Philadelphia has obviously righted the ship. They had a early, you know, they were shaky early this season. They're in total control of that division. They should win that division. But in terms of big picture-wise, I don't think Philadelphia is at – I'm not ready to say that Philadelphia is a team that can win the Super Bowl. Like, I'm not ready to say that they are what they were, say, 2 years ago. But if you're a Philadelphia fan, you have to be happy, certainly happy and pleased with how the defense is playing. Chargers survive Cincinnati 34-27. This is a game that in the past the Chargers absolutely would have lost. But you have Jim Harbaugh. Jim Harbaugh is a culture changer. This year, Chargers are winning close games. This year, the Chargers have an identity of physicality, despite the fact that Justin Herbert hasn't been great this year. He doesn't have the weapons that he once had, but, you know, you look at the Chargers and how they're in their makeup, you know, they run the ball and play great defense. They're the number one scoring defense in the league. They have a rushing game that can get you anywhere, can get you on a given day 130 to 150 yards. They don't make those classic mistakes that Charger teams used to make that used to have them losing so many games, especially in the fourth quarter. They play well at home, and they're going to be a very, very tough team, a tough out in the playoffs because they're so well coached and they have a beast for a quarterback. Justin Herbert is a legit. I don't care what anybody says, what the numbers say this year. I still think Justin Herbert is a legit top 7 to 8 quarterback in this league. So again, this is not the same Charger team that we've seen in the past. This team is not going to fall on its face, make a bunch of mistakes. They're not going to beat themselves the way they have in the past. They have a legit quarterback, franchise quarterback. They have an identity of physicality. And that's what Jim Harbaugh brings to your team. He brings that Big Ten physical running game, a defense. Again, he immediately was going to fix the defense. You know he immediately was going to fix the defense and running game, and that's what he's done. As far as Cincinnati goes, Joe Burrow, this is how bad Cincinnati's defense has been. Joe Burrow could throw for 40 touchdowns and under 10 interceptions and Cincinnati not make the playoffs. Like, Burrow and Ja'Marr Chase are having all-pro seasons. If Cincinnati was even a game over 500, we would be mentioning Joe Burrow as a possible MVP candidate. He's played that great, and his numbers have not been empty calorie stats. Like, they've lost a ton of close games. He has been phenomenal this year. He's having a career year. That is how poor their defense is. Since the Chargers are not a high scoring team. They're not a high scoring team at all in the least bit. They win games, 20-17, 17-10, 24-21. They win games, like I said, with their running attack and with their defense. This was a shootout for the Chargers. So that gives you a sense of just how just god-awful the Cincinnati defense is. They cannot stop anybody in a big spot. And I'm telling you right now, I don't think he's going to get – he probably won't get fired, but boy, yeah, that – Zach Taylor, it's going to be interesting seeing off – it's going to be an interesting offseason for Cincinnati because that team – there's no way that team should be 4-7. No way, no how. That team has too much talent on both sides of the ball, especially offensively, to be in a predicament that they're in right now. But they are in a predicament. They're not making the playoffs. We keep waiting for this late run. This late run is not going to happen. It's just not. So Chargers continue to roll, and Cincinnati continues to lose nail biters in the fourth quarter. San Francisco loses another close fourth quarter game, 20-17 to the Seahawks. San Francisco right now is what their record is. That's at 5-5, and that is an average team. They have been bad in these fourth quarters. Their defense has taken a major step back. No one is scared of the San Francisco defense used to be feared amongst one of the top 3 to 5 defenses in the league. That is no longer the case in these tough spots, especially in this fourth quarter where big plays have to be made. They are not able to close the game. San Francisco is not a team. I don't care how great of a play caller that Kyle Shanahan is. They are not a team that is going to win games with their offense by outscoring people. They cannot win games like that. San Francisco was built on physicality with the running game, with the defense. They want to win games like the Chargers are winning games. That's how ideally Kyle Shanahan would win games. He wants a top defense with a great running game and to salt the games away and close the games in the fourth quarter. Their defense has not been able to close games in the fourth quarter. And again, that is not something you turn on and off over the course of the regular season. I had a feeling coming into the season that this could possibly happen with San Francisco, that all those trips to the Super Bowl and coming up short, all those trips to the conference championships and coming up short will come back to bite them in the ass, and I've been 1,000% right. Because there has to be a mental letdown when you come this close, when you come as close as they've come, and like I said, in the two Super Bowl losses against Kansas City, think about that. They could have won. They could have won both those Super Bowls against Kansas City. Both of them. They could have won, that conference championship against the Rams a couple years ago. They had a lead in the fourth quarter. Forget about the Philadelphia conference championship with Philadelphia. They didn't have a quarterback. You can just toss that aside. Completely toss that aside. But again, year in and year out, they've been knocking on the door. And I know I mentioned earlier that sometimes a team can come out, can win a championship despite the fact that it not being their year, they can kind of come out of nowhere. Well, this is the flip side. A team can get to so close in terms of winning a championship, in terms of being right there, that when it doesn't happen, and you lose a devastating Super Bowl loss like they had against San Francisco, that could really set you back mentally for a franchise. That could absolutely set you back for a franchise. And right now, San Francisco does not look there. just mentally doesn't look there right now. They have played bad football this year, frankly. They've not looked good all season. Even in their wins, they haven't looked good, which has allowed the Arizona Cardinals, who, you know, have been one of the pleasant surprises in the league, to seemingly have control of that division. So Arizona is up a game, and really, in essence, two games on San Francisco. They beat San Francisco earlier this season. And when you start losing games, like their record right now, they're 5-5. They are 3-3 at home. 3-3 at home. So that lets you know how poorly they've performed. They have been a great home team over the last couple of years. So there you go with the Fade Four. We'll talk more about. We'll get back to the NFL in a couple of minutes. As far as who won the week, Deion Sanders. Deion Sanders is winning the year in college football. Colorado has improved to 8-2. They are ranked number 16 right now. They have a legit chance to make not only win the conference, but make the college football playoff round, of course, with the 12-team playoffs. Listen, they have two of the five best players in college football. Shedeur Sanders and Travis Hunter will both be invited to New York Heisman Trophy weekend for sure. They both could be top five picks. Travis Hunter could possibly be the number one pick in the NFL draft. Shedeur could be the number one pick. So they have a lot of talent from that standpoint at the skill positions. The difference to me has been their defense and physicality over the course of this season. And by the way, you heard a lot of stuff in the offseason that was going on off the field. Have not heard that stuff about that during the course of the season. They've gotten better basically each game. They had a tough loss. They had a blowout loss to Nebraska. Could have easily beat Kansas State. And you got to give Deion a lot of credit. That program 2 years ago when he took over, it was one of the worst Power Five football programs in college football. He is literally building this program from nothing. And, you know, you wonder what Deion's future could look like as we enter December. You're already hearing rumors of coaches that could be fired in the NFL. Dallas, Jacksonville, New York, both Giants and Jets will have new coaches. Chicago, maybe Cincinnati. I don't think Cincinnati's coach is going to get fired. Maybe. If I'm Deion Sanders, right, Dallas would be completely out. Sorry, I'm not. Folks, forget about this ideal or this pipe dream that Shedeur Sanders is coming to Dallas. You got that. What are you gonna do with Dak Prescott? Like, Dak Prescott has his trade value right now is at an all time low. He's coming off. He's gonna have a season ending. He just had a season ending surgery, and coming off, and he was playing poorly even for the injury. That contract, that's a bad contract right now. You can't cut him. That destroys your salary cap. So, they're stuck with Dak Prescott at least for probably the next 2 years, minimum 2025, minimum. So, Deion's not going there. Assuming Cincinnati is not in play, the Jacksonville, if you wanted to go to the NFL, the Jacksonville would be very enticing. I think that team, I still believe in Trevor Lawrence as a franchise quarterback. I think they are. Doug Peterson has done a horrible job with that team, that quarterback. It's in Florida. Deion could surprise some people and jump and go to the NFL. I don't think Deion Sanders is going to the NFL. I think Deion Sanders is going to stay at Colorado for another year or two, and I think Deion will parlay that into one of these jobs, whether it be Florida State, possibly USC, or even Ohio State. Now, keep this in mind, Ohio State. Ohio State is going to kill Michigan this year. They're going to destroy them. They will have their way with Michigan. If Ohio State loses early in the playoffs, Ryan Day will be absolutely on the hot seat. Ohio State probably has to get to the national championship for Ryan Day to keep his job. Do not think for a second that Deion Sanders will not leave Colorado if Ohio State job came calling. He would be gone in a heartbeat. In a heartbeat. Colorado is not a destination job for Deion Sanders in college football. I think he has one more place he wants to go. I promise you, Colorado is not his destination job. But I don't think Deion coaches in the NFL either, to be honest with you. If I had my money, I had to put money on it, I think he will return to Colorado next season. He's building something special there. He's going to be just completely beloved. He's going to be beloved there. They're going to probably build Deion a statue. Now, too early to see what the recruiting class is looking like, but we know what he can do in terms of the transfer portal. We'll see. I don't see Deion doing going to Dallas. Like I just don't see that at all. So Deion Sanders wins the week coaching the red hot Colorado Buffaloes. We're gonna go to a deep dive. We're about close to being a quarter into the NBA season. You have had some interesting stories, to say the least. First of all, I want to deal with this Embiid situation. Tyrese Maxey calls out Embiid in regards to him being late, his tardiness. It has been a Tyrese Maxey calls out Embiid in regards to his tardiness and being late to practices. And again, that this is supposed to be your franchise player, your guy who's won an MVP, a guy who is supposed to be, again, leading your franchise, and he's late to practice. He's being called out for being late to practices. So that just, again, that just tells you where Philadelphia is at, where that franchise is at as far as their culture. They have a toxic culture of zero, little to no accountability. This is the first time that I've heard anybody hold within that organization or that team hold Joel Embiid accountable in a real way. So good for Tyrese Maxey from that standpoint. Philadelphia is, all three of those guys haven't been on the court. And again, I don't know, considering what they have going on with the load management of Embiid, with the age of Paul George, I just cannot foresee those three guys developing chemistry, being on the court long enough, in even in the regular season, to develop chemistry that would make them even remotely interesting come the postseason. We'll get to the play-in game because the East is that bad. But that team right now is that franchise right now is an absolute shit show. There's no end, Maxey gets healthy. Embiid has been awful since he's gotten back. He's averaging like 14 points a game coming into tonight. As we record this on a Wednesday, you'll hear this on a Thursday. Shooting 32% from the field in 30 minutes. It's not a small sample of 30 minutes a game. Shooting 32% from the field, clearly was out of shape and has to play himself into shape, which is, again, this is a guy that's supposed to be your number one guy, is your former league MVP, multiple MVP runner-ups, perennial All-NBA player, was out of shape and did not have any major injuries in the offseason as he played in the Olympics. That's what you're dealing with when you're dealing with Joel Embiid. So you have that going on. Another question I have in regards to the NBA, how good is the Cleveland Cavaliers? Cleveland lost their first game to the Boston Celtics, snapping their 15-game winning streak. They dropped to 15-1, 120 to 117. This is despite the fact that Boston made 22 three-pointers. So give Cleveland a lot of credit from that standpoint, just being in the game and not getting completely knocked out by a barrage of three-pointers that Boston made. Boston, of course, we know can just destroy you and overwhelm you with their three-point shot. Like, they can turn an 8-point lead into a 25-point lead in 2 minutes. That was not the case. That almost was the case in this game. Cleveland came back. I don't know how much we learned from that game, a late November regular season game. You know, it was anticipated. At some point, Cleveland was going to lose a game. They were not going to catch Golden State's streak, 24 straight games set in 15-16 season. I never expected that. I don't know what Cleveland is. I think Cleveland will probably get home court. Will be in a conversation home court advantage in the East with Boston in the East. I can see Boston not really going gung ho for home court. To be honest with you, they just want to be healthy going to the playoffs. So, you know, it's a strong probability, health withstanding, that Cleveland does get home court. But again, Cleveland, I don't know what they are. Right now, I'm looking at them, they're not a championship team. They can shoot the ball. Mitchell will be an all NBA player this year. Mobley, very good player, has not, you know, for me to take him serious as a championship, Mobley would have to be a all-star, even close to being an all NBA player. He's not quite there yet. So, you know, Cleveland could be one of these teams that can win a bunch of regular season games and be just not built for the playoffs. I like Orlando. I like a healthy Orlando, I think, more than I like Cleveland, to be honest with you, with what they have cooking. And they, even despite the fact that Bancaro has been injured, Orlando has more than held the ship afloat and played well. So, I think Cleveland's very good. I don't think that they are not a championship. I'm not quite ready to say that they are a championship caliber team. The last thing before we move on from the deep dive, the Milwaukee Bucks, which, again, if not for the Philadelphia 76ers, would be the biggest disappointment to be in the NBA at 5-9. This is despite the fact that Giannis is playing like Giannis, having a putting up, you know, the usual 30-12 and on 60% shooting with, you know, 5 or 6 assists. But the bottom line is this team just doesn't have enough. If Chris Middleton is not going to play, which he hasn't this year, they have no chance. Outside of Giannis and Lillard, like, their third leading scorer is, like, I believe, Bobby Portis. That's not going to get it done. Lopez is clearly on the decline. And again, if you're Milwaukee, I don't see how you improve the team. Lillard is not a valuable trade asset. Nobody wants an aging two guard. And with the second apron and with some of the tax and luxury tax penalties that could come with trying to trade for a guy like that, it'll be hard enough to even pull off a trade with that salary. And, if you're Milwaukee, you just got to hope that Middleton can get healthy and get back on the floor, and Damian Lillard can somehow return to being an all NBA caliber player. That is your only hope. And Giannis can of course continue to be Giannis. There are no moves for them to make in season. I think they will make the playoffs because Giannis is that dominant. But I like this team. It'll be a very interesting offseason in 2025. For the Milwaukee Bucks, I don't know what you can do if you're Milwaukee as far as moves. They are frankly out of moves with the lack of assets that they have. Giannis, every day Milwaukee is obviously on the clock in regards to a possible move for Giannis. Let's say they were getting to play in and losing the first round, or you get to the first round, losing in the first round in the regular playoffs. I don't think I don't think they would do anything major at the trade deadline as far as that will shake up their team. Again, I just think Milwaukee right now just doesn't what can they do? What can they do? Like, again, they put a hope on top of hope that you get next level play from Lillard and Chris Middleton. I don't think Giannis will force his way out in the offseason. I don't think he will, but it might be a situation where, yeah, if I'm Milwaukee, Giannis has to demand to be traded. And even then, I'm like probably leaning towards saying no. He has 5 more years left on his deal. You got to hit him with a sell drop that convince him that, listen, we will improve the team, even if you don't believe it. Because you can't, that you're talking about a guy, again, we're talking about a guy who was literally one of the top 30 players of all time right now, even just at the age of 29 and only rising. You're not get back anywhere near fair to equal value unless you're talking about making a move with Oklahoma City. I don't see Oklahoma City. Oklahoma City could win a championship this year. They're not, teams are not, teams have seen what has transpired with Kevin Durant and taking these shots, despite the fact that I think Giannis is a better player than Kevin Durant at this stage. Teams are going to be very cautious with the possible moves that they will make. I don't think you're going to have anybody give up their entire franchise to get Giannis and just be stuck with Giannis with a bunch of role players. And I don't think Giannis would be content with that. So I think Milwaukee will have to hang on to Giannis and try to get rid of the Middletons, Lopez's of the world, see what they could possibly do with Lillard. But it's going to, again, they have no moves to make. They are completely deprived of draft assets and even quality role players that anybody would want. Real thoughts before I let you go. So a lot of reaction, of course, from the Mike Tyson and Jake Paul fight that have transpired last Friday. Paul, of course, won going away. He toyed with Mike Tyson. It never was really a fight outside the first round, which Tyson was semi-competitive. We know Tyson came in hobbled with the bad knee. It's funny hearing the discourse about this fight and in regards to the expectation level, or what was the expectation level of this fight. Now, 65 million people watched. It was an embarrassment to Netflix as far as their cable system, as far as they looked like they were on cricket, instead of the cricket Wi-Fi. Like, absolutely inexcusable. But when we look at the boxing, I don't know what the expectation should have been, what type of fight you were expecting from a guy who's 58 years old, who hadn't fought in almost 20 years, against a guy who is a former, YouTube sensation turned semi-pro boxer. Jake Paul trains with real boxers, so he'll knock the average man out. So, you can't beat Jake Paul. Let's get that straight. He's not a guy. Jake Paul is not a guy who will ever fight a top fighter or even a guy in the heavyweight division that's ranked in the top 10, top 15. Jake Paul is a master money businessman who has found a way to monopolize his YouTube, his following, his social media dominance into being one of the biggest draws in boxing. And you can't complain, because he's one of the biggest draws in boxing because of us, because we continue to watch his fights at this ridiculous rate. And what motivation would Jake Paul have on fighting a real fighter, or on fighting 2 or 3 times a year versus the one time a year that he fights. Like, he has no motivation for it. He doesn't care about his boxing legacy. He doesn't. Jake Paul is about numbers, the money, the ratings, the clicks. That's what Jake Paul is about. He's 27 years old. It's not, this guy is not a boxing purist. Remember, he came into boxing rich, a multimillionaire. He's one of the more, he was one of the more popular YouTubers out there, right? Was one of the most popular YouTubers out there before he came into boxing. He doesn't need boxing for money. Now, boxing has taken that career, his career to another stratosphere. But don't expect Jake Paul to give a shit about the respectability of boxing. He doesn't. That's not who he is. And again, you're not forcing him to do so. As an audience, you're going to continue to support his fights. He can fight Tommy Hitman Hearns. We will watch the fight. We will watch the fight, absolutely. Jake Paul has no desire to be a championship, world championship boxer. That's not what he's here for. As far as the Tyson angle, I felt bad watching Mike Tyson, like growing up watching Mike Tyson. And the way he was being toyed with and the way Jake Paul was carrying him, I didn't want to see Mike Tyson like that. Well, with that being said, there's no victims here. From a standpoint, I didn't feel sorry for Mike Tyson. He took the payday. He absolutely took the payday. And remember, I don't want to see Mike Tyson become a caricature again. Like the Mike Tyson that fought Lennox Lewis, the Mike Tyson, you know, after the second Holyfield fight, he kind of lost his way, saying wild shit. He gets the face tattoo. You know, he yells, I want to eat his children. So he had like a 4 or 5 year stretch after the second Holyfield fight where he completely just lost it. You can say he lost his mind. So he has this rebirth post-fight career where he loses a ton of money. He goes back to, according to him, living modestly. He kind of gets out of the spotlight, so to speak. But then he gets back in the spotlight with these powerful documentaries that he had. He gets the Hot Box, you know, podcast, which becomes enormously popular. And he humanizes himself. And it wasn't because of boxing. It was because of just the introspective nature of his personality. Just hearing him post fight career, that Mike Tyson became a cultural icon and had a rebirth of his career post boxing. Again, I don't want to see a 58-year-old caricature of Mike Tyson. There's no need for him to ever step back into a ring again, ring to fight. Ever. I don't care if it is an exhibition. I don't want to see him against Holyfield. I don't want to see him against Roy Jones Jr. I don't want to see him against anybody. There are plenty of avenues for Mike Tyson in the digital space, in the movie space, in the entertainment space. Like, he can do whatever he wants to from that standpoint. So I think that I hope he doesn't fight again. I don't know his current money situation, but it gets to a point to me where if you're just embarrassing yourself for a payday, that there has to be something that, like, you, I have to wonder that, I have to question whether or not you do have money problems at that point. There's no need for him to fight. He does, his legacy is his legacy. He's not going to diminish his boxing or advance his boxing legacy based off these exhibition fights that people don't take seriously from the standpoint of competitiveness. People, you know, thinking that the fights were staged. This fight was not staged. He got his ass whooped. Now, Jake Paul took it easy on him and could have beat the dog shit out of him, but it was not staged by any stretch of imagination. It wasn't. Like, Mike Tyson could couldn't beat Jake Favre if his life depended on it. Period, point blank. But again, don't blame Jake Paul. Blame, you know, you are for not holding boxing to a certain standard, or the history of, or not seemingly respecting the history of boxing or the sport as an art, as a craft. Don't. That's not Jake Paul's fault. That's your fault for watching it. That's our fault for entertaining it. That's going to wrap it up for this latest edition of the Real Deal Podcast. I will be back next week, right before Thanksgiving. Enjoy the rest of your week. So long.